It's time to take a spin around Wisconsin and find stories you might have missed. Here's Spinning the State on Spanning the State with Kristen Bry and Brian Noonan.
Another day, another spin around the state. If you miss anything or just want some more details of what we talk about, text SPIN to 855-616-1620. All right, let's go to the wheel.
Play me a song.
Song?
Maybe like a Wheel of Fortune type song.
White Water.
All right. Now I'm thrown off.
Yeah, sorry. Go. White Water.
Squirrel. What? Songs? Okay. Fear forces immigrants, even those who are legally in the U.S., to live in darkness. That fear is spreading across the country and has come back to Whitewater, the community that's been in the national spotlight for the past year over its influx of mostly Nicaraguan migrants. Rumors spread the other day that ICE agents were conducting raids in Whitewater. Well, that rumor turned out to be false. A report in the Journal Sentinel said it appears that officers from ICE visited a person's home and workplace in the area but left without finding them. Now, Whitewater, you may remember, got the distinction of a mention in one of Trump's earliest executive orders. The order pausing a federal refugee resettlement, which we were kind of talking to Sophie about when she left, names the college town in the second sentence. Likely none of the migrants in Whitewater are refugees who arrived through the resettlement program, which highly vets persecuted individuals who have fled their home countries and wait for years to be flown to the U.S. The incident also crystallized the challenge of verifying reports of immigration enforcement operations and the delicate balance advocates face in deciding how to share them without stirring up unnecessary fear. So, Whitewater, no reports of dogs and cats in Whitewater.
No, but this
thankfully.
Is also on the heels of, I saw earlier today, and I verified with Sophie, there was a mother, a Puerto Rican mother and daughter, who are citizens.
Yes.
In Milwaukee, who were interviewed with Telemundo because they said that they got picked up by ICE. But she was like, there seems like there's, so she's going to go look at that. But that, this is, it is ripe for disinformation and misinformation and rumors getting spread fast.
And that's why advocates are working very hard to try to quash some of these rumors. But I know I see on some of the neighborhood groups, there's a lot of reports and you don't know how many are true and how many are not. But, just be prepared. All right, spin it again. Oh, I think I know where we're going.
Wisconsin Rapids.
Hey, I know that place. Well, I heard about this story over the weekend because as if you're listening to the show for a while now, you know that my parents live in Wisconsin Rapids along with my grandmother and my aunts and uncles. And so this could be a very big deal for them. So, as we said, it seems like every week there's some report of a new data center that's opening or being voted on, et cetera, et cetera. And the latest report comes from Wisconsin Rapids, where a proposal has been presented to build an artificial intelligence computing center. According to a press release from Digital Power Optimization Incorporated and reported on by the Wisconsin Rapids Tribune, the developer and operator of Power Dense Data Centers has secured a land lease with Consolidated Water Power Company and plans to develop a $200 million facility capable of up to 20 megawatts of AI computing. Andrew Weber, the founder and CEO of Digital Power Optimization, told a reporter that the development will be a power-dense data center designed for artificial intelligence computing operations. DPO plans to start construction later this year with initial
energization.
Yes. That's not a word you say every day.
No.
Starting in 2026, DPO expects to create more than 100 on-site jobs between 2025 and 2026. And after opening, 12 to 20 full-time employees are expected to be hired. We'll be talking more about this with Rick Barrett because I was obviously now because of the close to homeness of this new data center of the pros and cons to a community when these pop up as far as what is the impact on the energy grid, the power grid, the, noise, tax benefits, like a lot of different things that go into this. Because I think there's over 5,000 across the country that have been popping up.
It's unbelievable how big they are. I don't like, and I also 20 megawatts of AI computing. I don't know.
You don't know what that means.
I don't know what that means.
Well, and what's interesting is consolidated water power. So this is connected to the empty paper mill.
Yes.
Right. And so the paper mill in Wisconsin Rapids is this massive building that is just sitting empty right now.
Was that the one that had the fire yesterday? There was a fire in Wisconsin Rapids yesterday.
I don't know about that one, but the potential of this is the same thing why the paper mills were on the river, mm-hmm. is being able to use the hydropower of the river. And so, interesting stuff.
Yes, so we'll learn more about that at 2:35 with Rick Barrett. But right now, we must, yes, I said must, spin the wheel.
Fond du Lac.
I'm going to ask this just for my own amusement. You ever been sturgeon spearing?
I have not.
All right. I knew the answer. I just wanted to say it out loud.
If someone wanted to teach me?
I would, too. It sounds fun. But anyway, last year's mild winter, not good. We talked about it for all sorts of outdoor activities and all sorts of businesses. Well, one of the activities that was affected by last year's mild winter was sturgeon spearing season. Who knew? A lot of people did. This year, spears and spectators, because people do go and watch, they're hoping for better ice conditions. So the sturgeon spearing season opens February 8th. It continues for 16 days or until all of the harvest caps are met. So the Oshkosh Northwestern reported that last year's harvest was impeded by the poor ice condition. The total harvest for 2024 was 432 sturgeon. I guess that's less than normal, including 302 from Lake Winnebago and 130 from the upriver lakes, making it one of the few years where the upriver lake season lasted the full 16 days. Now, during the season, licensed spearers, so you got to get a license, Kristen, before you pick up your spear, they can go out on the ice from 7 a.m. to 1 p.m., and then they must register their harvest by 2 p.m. with the DNR. The spearing season's success depends on water clarity, which DNR biologists haven't yet been able to safely test, and ice conditions, which are monitored by local fishing clubs.
All right.
So, yes. I see you're looking at that spell check. That's how it's spelled.
Well, I just would I've never, I mean, it makes sense. If one who spears is called a spearer, but it's like a weird word
either.
To say.
And it's an odd word to see typed out. It's like, that doesn't look right.
Because it wants it to say speaker.
I know it does.
Yeah.
But see, this is where I defeat the machines. This is where I exceed my dominance. Also, I can exceed my dominance if I go and rock out sometimes, and I might want to go rock out in February.
Oh.
I thought we were doing the Frampton thing.
Oh, yeah, the Frampton thing. Yes, we're giving away. Good transition. I dropped the ball.
You looked at me like there's what? Only three stories.
I thought you were going to set up Google Maps that we're talking about when we come back. I was like, what does rocking out in February have to do with Google Maps? I'm so lost. Hey, guess what? We're giving away two tickets to see Hall of Fame inductee Peter Frampton.
We are.
It's his Let's Do It Again tour. If you don't win tickets right now, you can still see him live at the Riverside Theater on April 15th. He's a Grammy winner. He's the one. He's the only. Peter Frampton. Tickets are on sale now at PabstTheaterGroup.com. Or you can win them for free if you call 855-616-1620, the Sighting Unlimited WTMJ talk and text line. Call now. Be nice to Rhea. And when we come back, we are going to talk about Google Maps.
Yes.
And maybe we'll rock out as well. I don't know. Stay tuned.
Spanning the state.
Welcome back to Spanning the State.
Ron is going to rock out with Peter Frampton in February.
It's so, in April, though.
Is it April?
It's April 15th.
Well, listen.
It's tax day.
That's why I'm going in February.
That's why you really confused me, because I was like, what is in February?
Okay, I thought it was February. Listen,
congratulations, Ron.
Yeah,
have
Ron,
fun.
Enjoy the concert. Read your certificate to find out when the concert is. Don't take it from me. I got other things on my mind. You brought this story in, and this is a perfect lesson of read past the headline.
Yeah. Well, I thought this was just interesting, because I think people have different feelings. I think people have a lot of different feelings about the fact that Trump has renamed the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of America. And beyond that, whatever your feelings are about that,
right.
People then had feelings about the fact that Google said that they're going to for American users. So if you are on your IP address that is going on Google Maps, for you, I don't even know if it, we could probably test it right now.
Well,
to see if it changes.
They're not going to do it yet. They're only going to make the changes after the government updates its official listings.
So, but they said they will change, so it will reflect for American Google Map users to say the Gulf of America. But if you are, say, in Europe or in Mexico, it will say Gulf of Mexico.
And the same thing for Denali.
Same thing for Denali.
Here in the U.S., it will say Mount McKinley. Everywhere else on the globe, it will say Denali.
And so it was interesting. I read this morning. I was like, this is an interesting piece of technology diplomacy, I guess, if you want to call it that.
Sure.
Because it isn't the first time that they have done this. So in South Korea, locals see the body of water between them and Japan labeled East Sea, while the rest of the world sees it as the Sea of Japan.
Okay.
And according to the Washington, this is according to the Washington Post. So still, Google's change is still raising eyebrows given, you know, the Trump administration close ties to the tech industry. But I thought it was interesting just as the fact that there are these disputes all over the world,
sure,
right? As far as certain countries, it's not just unique right now to us as far as calling it one thing versus another thing. And it reminded me, I still am not totally clear on the details, but it reminded me, did you see Barbie when it came out in 2023?
Well, I saw it at home, but I have seen it.
Did you like it?
Yeah, it was fine. I'm not like, oh my God, it's my favorite movie of all time, but I did enjoy it. It was fun.
Good.
It was fun.
So I don't know if you remember this, because it was controversial, but I think to most Americans, they were like, wait, what? So Barbie was banned in Vietnam.
Why?
Because there was the scene where Barbie and, so it's Margot Robbie and Kate McKinnon, and it's the scene where, is it dysfunctional Barbie? Is that?
Yes.
Yes. That's what most of my Barbies look like. and there was a map. If you remember, like it was her trying, it was like basically when Barbie's trying to get to the real world,
yes,
right? And there was a map.
And
it looks like, you know, a child's map. It looks like a map that like a kid drew with crayons. But apparently there was a dotted U-shaped trail crossing into the ocean from what's supposed to be on that map, China. And there's a lot of controversy over that because the so-called like 9-dash line is a maritime boundary demarcating Beijing's contested ownership over the South China Sea. So this is similar as far, and so basically there was all these accusations that this Warner Brothers and the movie, who they kind of threw their hands up and were like, this was not like supposed to be coded as far as like a bending the knee to China or anything. I don't know whatever played out. I don't know if Barbie ever got not banned in Vietnam, but that simple thing as far as what the map looked like, that was a child looking map, was a big enough deal that it was interpreted as a tip of the hat to China over this controversial part of the South China Sea.
And I wonder if you were not Vietnamese, Chinese or Vietnamese, if you even noticed that.
Well, apparently a lot of people noticed, right? Because I think it was even in the trailer before the movie even came out.
Really?
There was a part of the trailer that, if I remember this correctly. But it was just interesting to me as far as taking it outside of our, you know, American-centric view, that we are not alone when it comes to calling bodies of water or different, not monuments, but mountains.
Yes.
Something else that the rest of the world knows is a different name.
I found it interesting that, because I read the story in the AP, and they said they are going to continue to call the Gulf of Mexico the Gulf of Mexico because that's how they've done
press
it
is going to?
For 4 years. But they will call Denali Mount McKinley because that is firmly in the United States and solely in the United States, and so the president has the right to rename that. So they will still reference Denali, but they will call Mount McKinley Mount McKinley, but because other countries surround the Gulf, they are going to keep calling it the Gulf of Mexico.
What's interesting is that it's not the Gulf of the United States. It's the Gulf of, he named it the Gulf of Americas, which technically Mexico is Central America.
Right.
So, like, we're all this whole continent between North America, Central America, and South America are the Americas.
Right, but he didn't name it the Gulf of the Americas, which does then encompass everybody. Everybody's included. No. We all know what he meant. Mexico, you can't even swim in here. So next time you want to go on a vacation to Mexico along the Gulf, I don't know if they're going to let you swim. So just be careful. But yeah, I think Gulf of the Americas, I would have liked that.
You could have got on board with?
Well, yeah, because it's inclusive.
Yeah.
As opposed to going, 400 years, we don't need you. We're going to call it whatever we want. All right, let's do this. Then we'll come back. And then there's more, allegedly, on Spanning the State.
Welcome back to Spanning the State. I am Kristen Bry.
I'm Brian Noonan. We talked in Spinning yesterday about a Milwaukee ER doctor who was going to be on Jeopardy on the Tournament of Champions last night. I did not get a chance to watch.
I also did not get a chance to watch, but good thing Drake Bentley from Milwaukee Journal Sentinel did, because she advanced.
That's great.
She advanced to the semis for the Tournament of Champions. So congratulations to Amy Hummel.
Very nice.
I still need to catch up with Adam. As far as
got through,
yeah.
I really wanted to get on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, and I took that quiz on the phone numerous times.
Okay.
This was before online stuff. So you had to do it on the phone, and I got through once, but then they're all right. We'll call you
They
never called. That would have been game show number 4 that I was trying to get.
How much money did you make in total? Or is that a secret?
Well, no. The first one, I won $100,000.
That's great.
Then the next one was smaller. I won $25,000.
That's still a lot of money.
It was a lot of money.
Just for like an afternoon. Because all these shows, I always think about that for like Wheel of Fortune or Jeopardy. It's like how quickly the time, because each episode is only 22 minutes in totality when you're watching it. So it's like they knock those out.
Oh, they're banging them out.
In an afternoon's work, you're like, I made $25,000. That's huge.
Go home. That was fun. And then the last one, I just won a trip. I won a trip to Vegas at the Imperial Palace in the honeymoon suite, which was great. But we didn't know it was the honeymoon suite, so we brought Molly with us, and she was about 3. And we're in a room with a heart-shaped tub and mirror over the bed. And it's like, oh, well, this may not be for the child. Also put a hamper on all the imperial
the
romance.
Honeymoon activities.
Yeah, all the honeymoon activities. Oh, my goodness. When we come back, we'll talk about the impact of data centers on communities. But right now, it's ABC News and local headlines. Welcome back. It's Spanning the State. I'm Brian Noonan.
And I am Kristen Bry. And you've likely seen one, if not all, of these different headlines over the last couple months. Microsoft acquiring 240 acres in Kenosha for a major data center project. AI computing facility planned for Wisconsin Rapids. Port Washington Council okays annexation deal for data center. There's a lot of headlines about data centers popping up around Wisconsin. And the truth is, I feel like, despite having worked in tech at one point, I know very little about data centers.
I don't either. I know they're big and they take a lot of power.
Exactly. So here to explain the pros and cons of these data centers is Rick Barrett, business reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Welcome back to the show, Rick.
Yeah. Hi. Thanks, Kristen and Brian.
Thanks for coming.
Am I missing any of the proposed projects besides the 3 that I just listed off?
Not as of today.
Okay. So when we talk about this, what is a data center? Is it just storage for thousands of servers?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, a data center, think about it, is kind of the behind the scenes for many of the things we already do. Social media, streaming video, banking, chat GPT, a lot of the things that we just have now integrated into our lives. The data center is the behind the scenes machine that makes it all happen.
That stores the content, that stores the data, basically, right?
Yes, and also is connected with a much, much wider worldwide system of data centers, all exchanging information in real time.
Got it.
Well, a lot of the questions, when any big development is coming to a municipality, they say, oh, it's going to create jobs. Are data centers good job creators? I know we quoted the story from Wisconsin Rapids. Yeah, there's going to be about 100, but that's just during construction. And then for this particular project, say, 12 to 20 full-time employees. That, to me, doesn't sound like a long-term employment generator.
Yeah, I mean, the smaller data centers sometimes will only employ 15 or 20 people. They need technicians to monitor the operations. Larger data centers like the one that's being built in Mount Pleasant, that's much different. That will be one of Microsoft's largest in the world.
Okay.
It could employ many more people than
okay.
that.
All right. Well, that's good.
And so then what do they do to the power grid? Because obviously part of this conversation is how much power they need, how much power AI needs. And so does that impact the surrounding area as far as not having as strong of the electricity, or how does that even work?
It's a good question, Kristen. The power needs are enormous. I mean, the Mount Pleasant data center, when it's up and running, the first phase alone will consume the equivalent of electricity needed to power more than 300,000 homes.
Whoa.
So we're talking about new power infrastructure that has to be put in place. And it's going to be that way, you know, for data centers all over the country. It's enormous electricity demand.
And for that kind of infrastructure, does that benefit the community too, or are these being put in place just to power those facilities?
You know, Brian, I think it does benefit the broader community. We Energy says that it wants to build these gas-fired power plants for not only the Microsoft data center, but for the surrounding area too, which has seen a lot of growth, whether it's Amazon or Uline. There's a lot that's happening in that area.
And so then with, because I think I saw in the Port Washington conversation of what it can do for the tax valuation for an area. And so is it because these companies would be paying taxes that then would offset ever having to increase property taxes or even be able to lower property taxes?
It's a good question. I think the Port Washington example is still way out there. I mean, there hasn't been a data center that's been confirmed for that site yet. So I don't think we really know all the tax implications
okay.
yet.
But for Mount Pleasant, what is the trade-off there when it comes to tax valuations?
I think that's yet to be determined.
Okay.
What other, as we're thinking about, we talked about the power infrastructure for the electricity and things like that. A facility like this, does it need more traffic infrastructure? It wouldn't seem like it because there's not as many employees as if you're building like the Amazon facility down in Racine. You've got lots of employees coming in. Here you wouldn't need that. So outside of electricity, what else would have to be done that would affect the community as a whole?
It's a really good question, Brian. I mean, there will be the needs for a large amount of water. But then Microsoft is also saying this will be somewhat of a self-enclosed system so that even though it uses a lot of water, it will be efficient and they'll keep reusing the same water for cooling purposes of these servers, which generate a lot of heat and mm-hmm. need water to cool them. So water is one of them. Electricity is the biggest one. And Microsoft is saying, look, we're going to look for solar. We're going to look for renewable energy to do this. They have every intention of making it as green of a project as they can, but that's not going to supply all the need.
Other than, you know, using up a lot of land, are there any cons to this for people in these communities? Any drawbacks?
As you've been covering this, what do you see as kind of the overall net positive or net negative of more of these projects popping up?
I think the net positive is, you know, whether we like data centers or not, the services that they provide, the behind-the-scenes infrastructure is something we're all going to need.
Okay.
You know, whether it's in our banking that we all do online now or facial recognition, driverless cars, at some point we're going to need this technology. That's the biggest pro. The cons, we'll just have to wait and see.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, it's well they're coming.
They're coming. I mean, that's the thing. It just seems like they're coming and they're coming. I mean, and it's not that we don't have the space or the empty right. buildings potentially to house them, right? Like I said, with the one in Wisconsin Rapids, that paper mill has been sitting empty. Well, and so the opportunity to fill it with something that is useful, I think, is a good conversation to be having.
One real quick last question, Rick. What are when people go to these town open meetings and they're against the data center, what is the common beef that they have? What's their objection other than it's taking up our beautiful farmland?
Yeah, I think the common objection right now, Brian, is the amount of electricity that's going to be needed and where's it going to come from.
Got it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we answered that.
All right. Well, Rick Barrett, as always, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Rick.
Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it.
Rick Barrett is a business reporter at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We will have more after this. Welcome back to Spanning the State. I am Kristen Bry.
I'm Brian Noonan. I thought of your family today when I saw this story, your husband and Frankie. So Mike seems like the new wave of dad, very involved in their child's life.
Very involved.
Yes. And that started really when I was a young dad, too, because people were getting more. It's not the old way of, you know, dad goes to work, comes home at 5:00. Mom has a drink waiting for him. He pats the kids on the head and then tells them to leave him alone. The kids go to bed and the parents eat the dinner later. That's not how it was in our house, but that was, you know, the old stereotype. But now there is a guy in Milwaukee, Adam Haggerty. He is a new dad. His child is 2 years old.
All right.
So he used to show up to events with his daughter and his wife, and he was the only dad there, which surprises me. But these dads weren't coming along. You know, dads were just too busy, whatever, to go to these things. So he decided, you know, this is weird. I feel out of place. So he decided he was going to create a group where dads could get together. And just like moms will talk about parenting and stuff, the dads could do it. So he started a hiking group for dads.
All right.
In Milwaukee, they go to all these parks, and it's the dads and their kids, and the dads will talk as they hike, and it doesn't sound like a touchy feely, you know, men's group kind of thing where they're going to sit around and bang a drum and cry, that kind of stuff. It sounds like guys who want to spend time with their kids, but be
with other guys,
and maybe have questions that only another dad can answer. You know, there's certain things I'm sure that moms really feel they can only get insight from another mom because they're uniquely qualified to answer that question. So for this, it's dads, and they meet every other Saturday, and they go to different parks, and they've had to go inside. One time they had to go in the domes because the weather was bad. But they go around, and it sounded like such a nice, happy thing. And it made me think about how the role of dad has evolved, and even though in some places it still takes some time, and in certain, you know, in certain communities or in certain cultures, there's different ways to approach fatherhood. But this is, as I'm looking at these guys, go look at these nice young men walking around with their kids. But it's important to spend that time with your kid, and two, there's probably a lot of questions that I would have liked to
ask. Well, it's interesting because I feel like there is, you know, there's like those mommy and me groups and stuff as far as different, what is the name? Peanut? I feel like is the, it's an app. I think it's like a Tinder, but for new moms to make other new mom friends.
Okay.
I think it's called Peanut. And so, you know, because I think as someone who had a kid a year and a half-ish ago, you know, there's a loneliness that can come from when you're first, especially when you have your first kid and everything. But I would agree as far as I think that there is a lot more available for new moms, even if that's still newer as far as the different, like this app or different Facebook groups but the mommy and me classes of trying to meet other new moms who have kids who are around the same age as your kids, especially if, you know, you're the first one in your friend group to have kids and all your girlfriends are still single. But I would say that I've seen less that are targeted to new dads specifically. If you don't have other guy friends who are also dads already and you're a new dad, this is kind of innovative.
Yeah. And he's a psychotherapist, and it's called Dad's Walk. So you can check it out. It's every other Saturday. But yeah, there's no, you can talk to your friends, But sometimes your friends are going to tell you what you want to hear. You know, they're, oh, don't worry. Yeah, this always happens. Whereas if you're meeting with a bunch of different dads, you're going to get a bunch of different opinions, a bunch of different outlooks, and then you can develop your own way to do it based on all the different input that you've gotten.
There you go.
So take your kid out hiking. Well, the farthest we, I'm trying to think. I don't know if walking to the park is a hike, but I did that with Molly all the time. Well, the park wasn't really close. It was a little way away. So it was,
I feel like a hike has to have some kind of incline for it to be considered a hike.
Really? So if I, I don't know. If I.
What's the difference between a hike and a walk then?
Well, that's the thing. Is it distance? Is it terrain?
I think it's terrain. If I take a walk around, a 5 mile walk on sidewalks, that's not a hike.
But if you're in a lot of these parks, there's not inclines. You're just walking around a lake or maybe a little hill.
They're not like mountainous, but I would say most of the hikes that I've been on in and around Milwaukee have some kind of up and downness to them.
Up and downness.
Up and downness. I just made that up.
Yeah,
all right.
Well, I get it. Let's do this. We'll come back and say goodbye. It's Spatty the State.
I believe it's time for me to fly.
Indeed, indeed. We've got about a minute left before we hand it over to Wisconsin's afternoon news. We'll see you not until Friday.
Tomorrow, Steve Scafidi sitting in this chair and joining you for the big festivities.
Big festivities.
Anything planned?
Well, I think he sent, Belichick floated some idea as far as changing the Lombardi trophy to mention Tom Brady. I have not read the article yet. I imagine Steve Scafidi will have very strong feelings about
sports takes.
So we may talk about that. And who knows? In this era, what could happen overnight between now and 1 p.m. tomorrow is a lot.
What
so
fresh
sure
nightmare will
we will have lots of stuff to discuss. And, you know, with Steve and I, it's always energetic.
Very good. As opposed to this where it's just lethargic. All right. Let's say goodbye because Wisconsin's afternoon news is next, I believe. So we will fly.
We will fly. See ya.